Wherever the road may take you, Discount Tire and Continental Tire get you there safely with the perfect combination of style, comfort, and price. Get a set of Continental tires at your local Discount Tire store or online at discounttire.com. Discount Tire, let's get you taken care of.
Hello there, I'm Chuck Todd, and this is the Chuck Toddcast. So, we now have a picture of Republicans' wins from the midterms, and on Tuesday this week, the 2024 campaign officially kicked off with former President Trump's announcement that he was running for the White House again. So, we wanted to know what was going on inside the GOP, the fallout from the midterms, and what Trump's announcement could do to the internal dynamics. My guests today are Republican strategist Doug High and Sarah Chamberlain, the president and CEO of the Republican Main Street Partnership. You know, Sarah, I'll start with you. You know, to me, the result of the midterms was known before the midterms, meaning it was more likely that there wasn't going to be a gigantic change, right? We were literally fighting over a couple of Senate seat switches, and the idea was, is it going to be 20 to 25 House seats or 10 to 15, right? It ends up less than 10. But my whole thesis was, the question is, the losing party was going to have to deal with its divisions first. The winning party could paper over those divisions. And look, I think some of us thought we were going to be having, you two wouldn't be on, I'd be having two Democrats on to talk about wokeness versus the pragmatists. But guess what? They don't have the problem. It's Trumpism versus pragmatism. So, Sarah, here we are. And I have to tell you, the fact that it's everybody from the right that's complaining, who's sticking up for the mainstream in the GOP? And where do you guys go to get some recriminations?
So the Republican Main Street Partnership is over 80 strong. We are the majority makers. We had a meeting this morning, and everyone in that room is the reason we have the slight majority we do. They're from New York and California. So we are standing up. We're not quite as vocal as the Freedom Caucus is, but they were working with Kevin behind the scenes and requesting what they want. And so it is going on.
Doug, how would you assess it?
Pretty similarly. Obviously, we have some outstanding races still. I'm still hopeful that David Valadao comes through in California, one of my favorite members. But this is a debate the party has been having, and now it's just having it a bit of a louder conversation. Is, you know, what do we do when we're disappointed in ourselves, essentially, even though there's finger pointing? You know, what do we do when we're disappointed yet again? And clearly there's an appetite to move on from Trump, but there's real challenges with that as well, because, you know, a lot of people have tried to move on before and they've been mowed down. There's a lot of private complaining, but not a lot of public complaining. And so now it's ratcheted up a bit, but you still have a party that has Trump as its most dominant figure.
Yeah.
And right now I would say is the front runner for the campaign for 2024, even though it's, of course, insane to be talking about that this early. And, you know, look, with the speech last night, and admittedly, I was watching basketball last night. I didn't watch the speech live.
Dude, it was an amazing opening night of basketball, even though it was not opening night. But I mean, when you have Duke, Kansas, Kentucky, you know, playing, no offense to presidential politics, but man, give me some of that.
And look, when Donald Trump speaks, you don't miss it. You know, even if you're not watching it live, you don't miss it. So I've seen the speech, but, you know, if I were to tell you that Donald Trump gave a bizarre-ish announcement speech in a sort of weird location, that a lot of the chattering class was laughing about it, that he didn't have any mega donors, and the Murdoch media world was split.
Are you talking about, is this June? I think I know where you're going. Are we in 2015 or 2022?
Exactly. And that's why I've told everybody laughing, whether they're Republicans or Democrats, you better take this seriously.
Sarah, I'm also sort of wondering, how bad of a look is it that after a failure of a night for the Republican Party as a whole, your wing of the party, I think sort of you're right. I think the majority is basically going to have been made by the mainstream GOP. But are you really going to war in 24 with the same faces as the leaders of the party, right? McCarthy, McConnell, McDaniel, all the mix, and McTrump?
Probably, you know? To be honest. But I will tell you, I had 50 of them this morning. Donald Trump's name didn't come up. They're really much more focused on making sure the House is not in total meltdown and chaos, especially the freshmen that were in the room. They're like, what happens if no one on the Republican Party gets to 218 votes? Who's the speaker? Like, what?
Speaker Bacon. I thought it's Speaker Bacon, Sarah.
Yeah, very much.
He's already he's floating himself, right?
But I mean, right now, that is what my members and the members of the Republican Main Street Partnership are focusing on. They will get to Trump. Some of them support Trump. Some of them stay neutral on Trump that were in that room. But they want to figure out, like, what are we going to do come January? And who is going to lead the House of Representatives? And that is the number one concern for them right now.
You know, it's funny. I feel like Republican politics is really sort of where the country is as voters. We know as voters what we don't want, but we're not sure what we want. And I feel like Republican elected leaders know what they don't want, but they don't know what they want.
Yeah. And look, this is, you know, I think part of the challenge here is this is the part of the argument that Republicans have been having internally and externally over the past 2 years. And it's where it's hard to define what is a conservative, what is a moderate these days, because it's not about policy. It sort of is more adherent about Trump. You're a conservative if you wear the red hat as red as you can. And, you know, that's not where the majority of the party is. So if we look at, let's take three nominations where Donald Trump endorsed people, J.D. Vance, Dr. Oz, and somebody who was at the speech, the only member of Congress at the speech, Madison Cawthorn. What do they have in common? It's not that they all won because Madison Cawthorn lost. Mm-hmm. It's that they all got about 32%, right? And so if you win, it's a big win for Donald Trump at 32%. If you lose, it's a huge rebuke for Donald Trump at 32%. It says to me that there's two-thirds of the party that may like some Trumpy things, but they don't want the constant chaos. And again, that's not conservative or moderate or what have you. It's about, I hate to use the kind of tired phrase, it's about trying to move forward, right? They want a party that works. And so, you know, we're going to get to January 3rd. And even if we have a good sense of what may happen on January 3rd, and we may not, there's still going to be surprises that happened. I remember in January of 2013, the speaker vote for John Boehner being on the floor and Michelle Bachmann's name being called and Marsha Blackburn's name being called. I remember those because those are the first two, the Bs, and they weren't on the floor. So you're going to have surprises. You may even have some chaos, even if you get to 2018. And these members and ultimately the voters don't want the chaos.
Yeah. You know, Sarah, I have empathy here, you know, in this respect, when you're a member of a political party, you know, a lot of, and I look, Bill Cassidy was on my show Sunday, and it was sort of, I had so many people say to me, wait a minute, he voted to convict Trump, but he can't say whether he'll support him again or not, right? Like it is. And yet I understand why he's as a member of the organization called the Republican Party, I understand the hesitancy, Sarah, because there's a probably at least a 51% chance he's the nominee. And it's a real complication. And it really, you know, look, I think history is never going to be kind to Mitch McConnell and the rest of the Republicans who could have voted to convict him and made yesterday illegal. Yesterday would not have happened, meaning the Trump announcement. But at this point, I sort of, like I said, I understand the response, even if people that are not Republicans go, what the heck is he talking about? Sarah, explain that conundrum.
Oh, boy. You give me the easy questions here, Chuck. Thanks. It is almost impossible to explain. I mean, our members are, like I said, Trump didn't come up, but I would tell you our members, if Trump is a nominee, will probably end up supporting him. I mean, they're Republicans first. I think they would like to see other candidates in the race, but you know, if he is the Republican nominee, they will fall in line as they did last time. It's just kind of the way politics is. I think the Democrats would do the same thing if the shoe is on the other foot. Mm-hmm. So it's an interesting dynamic that we're in, no doubt. But we're here and I don't think anybody knows how to get out of it.
No, I think we've learned there's 10% of both parties that do vote on values, character, and all of those things. But I think that's about it, Doug High. That ultimately, it's probably about it. And this is the lesson Republicans might need another election cycle to be taught if they can't figure out how to shake Trump.
Absolutely. And, you know, how many losses do we take have to take? How many times do we need to lose the Senate in a 2-year period, right? Twice before we should have learned this lesson, even though we should have learned it before. And,
right.
You know, I tell members this all the time and they get it and then they don't act on it, is you're always trying to score points with Donald Trump. But Donald Trump is not somebody who gives points. He only takes them away mm-hmm. one at a time. And so, you know, we see that as he dangles his support over people. He'll support you today, but you don't know about tomorrow. And very clearly, we know that he's willing to take the party down with him this time as well if he's not the nominee. And so, you know, let's say that Donald Trump runs and loses fair and square. He'll say it was stolen from him, like he said the Iowa caucus was. And Ted Cruz is a good lesson here, right? He said, Donald Trump said that Ted Cruz stole the Iowa caucus, said his wife was ugly, and his dad was an assassin. And then we saw the pictures.
Not of any Ted. Assassin. The yeah. JFK assassin. Let's, JFK like, assassin. I mean, let's, I mean, my goodness. Right.
And then we saw the pictures of Ted Cruz phone banking for him. Right. So yeah. Courage is a rare commodity in American politics. I get it. But whomever that nominee is, do we see Donald Trump giving a rousing convention speech for that person? He couldn't even do it for the Senate candidates that he endorsed.
Sarah, you're being generous. This is the question that no Republican strategist can ever answer to me, which is if Donald Trump is if Donald Trump doesn't have the votes to be the nominee, doesn't have the delegates to be the nominee, how does he concede?
He does not concede. I think he goes off and tries to run as an independent. I don't see
him. I mean, he's going to pull it. I mean, this feels like the best analogy feels like 1912, that he is, you know, Teddy Roosevelt was just one bitter, angry dude in 1912 on Taft. And, you know, history's been kinder to him. But in that period, he was nothing but a divider for his party.
I think Trump, if he doesn't run, if he doesn't win the primary, we'll go in against members of Congress that he thinks hurt him and try to run primary challenges to them.
There's also, you know, how this gets determined. You know, the RNC rules had a big determination on, you know, who became the nominee. Donald Trump didn't win because he had a majority of voters. He didn't.
Yeah.
But if you have winner take all states and you win by one vote, well, then you get all those delegates. And that's something that the RNC, whomever it determines that the next chair will be, I think is going to have to wrestle with. And by the way, that's going to be a fight too.
Do you expect it to be, Doug? You're a little more, you've been in the RNC world. The 168, I mean, I've always thought that's Trump's trump card for this nomination, is that he's appointed, that RNC is probably more Trumpy than any of the other official GOP institutions, whether it's the House Republican Conference, the Senate Republican Conference. I feel like the RNC 168 is probably the most loyal to Trump.
No, it absolutely is. And they don't even complain privately to the level that members of Congress and senators do. So if you try and change those rules to make it, you know, whether you want to say that that's fairer or not, but to change how that system is done, you're going to have a real fight on your hands.
So let's go through this a bit individually. Is the best way for McCarthy to get to 218 if Nancy Pelosi is sitting on the other side as the official Democratic leader?
Yes.
I mean, that's been my thinking. Like, this becomes more complicated for McCarthy if Pelosi does not seek the leadership post.
And the other thing is, and we're not Freedom Caucus, but who does Freedom Caucus want? And is it somebody that can get 218 votes? I mean, the men and women of Main Street are working, you know, to help Kevin try to confirm that he can get to 218, because who is the alternative?
Is there anybody like Paul Ryan out there? Sarah, you know, who could be that? He was the Band-Aid, essentially. He was the Band-Aid the last time. Is there a Band-Aid that exists in the House?
Not that the members think, not that anybody can identify, no. And more importantly, not that anybody wants that job. I mean, it's a tough job, especially if we're at 220, you know, 219, 220. It's very difficult.
Yeah. Mr. High.
Yeah, I spoke to a member over the weekend who's sort of on that. Okay, if it doesn't become Kevin on that short list after that, and they would not even privately entertain the idea, said a different, literally said different topic, right? We're going to talk about something else. And, you know, I think that's the challenge. And part of that is, you know, you do have people who are gun shy. A lot of people will say, well, if it's not Kevin, then Steve Scalise fits that bill pretty well. Maybe, But he doesn't want to talk about it, because if you talk about it, then, you know, it becomes a Fight Club rule, mm-hmm. and you sort of, you know, ruin your chances. So you don't want to be seen, you know, eyeing it. You don't want to be seen. And let me put it to you this way. So the John Boehner vote, 2013, January, we were talking with Cantor about, people are going to vote for you. And when they do, you have to shake your head no and look visibly upset, mm-hmm. and do it even if you're slightly overperforming, because the reporters in the gallery need to see that you're not happy about this. And members are on their phone on the floor, even if they're not supposed to be, so that they see that John Bresnahan and Paul Kane are tweeting, mm-hmm. Cantor's upset about that.
The thing that has surprised me a little bit this week is the Tom Emmer victory, because it felt like that was revenge of the mainstream. That was, that Emmer, when you looked at the choices there, right? Banks, for whatever, you know, he'd sort of hitched his wagon a little bit too much to the Trump train. And it did seem like there was anybody but Banks vote. Cause I think if Ferguson had been a vote ahead of Emmer, he probably ends up winning. What's your sense of, am I reading too much into Emmer's victory?
I think you're reading a little bit too much into it. Though I do know the Main Street members voted with Emmer. Emmer's a Main Street member. So again,
that's what I thought. Yeah.
The big I mean, he's, votes.
He's been a pragmatist at the NRCC.
He has. You know, and Drew, when he dropped out, most of his votes went to Tom as well. So it was not really a surprise for us to have Tom elected, to be honest.
Well, I guess I look at it this way, Doug. Isn't that say something about where the conference is, that you had a choice between sort of the Trump wing and the non-Trump wing, and a slight mm-hmm. majority picked the non-Trump wing in that slot?
Yeah. No, that's a secret ballot, right?
Yeah.
And I think it was Tom Davis who said the only vote that you can depend on is the person who looks you in the face and says, I'm not voting for you. But that's again part of the challenge.
Yeah.
This is what's showing itself in the speakership vote as well. It's a secret ballot, and you ultimately don't know. And the way members do this is, at least on the Republican side, is they rank people from 1 to 5. 1 means I'm going to stab you in the front, and 5 means I'm going to stab somebody in the front for you. And if Kevin starts losing some 5s, much less the 4s, he has no room for error anyways. But if he loses a 5 or 2, or they even start expressing doubt privately that we then hear about, it's a big problem.
I know, but I just go back. You can't beat somebody with nobody.
Right.
And you tell me Jim Jordan can get 218, Sarah?
No.
Right?
No.
I mean, I, you know, the only person I could think of who could is leaving, and it's Kevin Brady. I feel like he's the closest thing to a Paul Ryan-like figure. And, oh, by the way, he's retiring.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think he would have had a chance. He could have gotten the 218. But I cannot identify anybody else who can easily do 218 at this point. It's fascinating to
is there even a Dennis Hastert like figure? And I say this for those of you thinking what Dennis had before we found out what he did in his personal life. He was seen as sort of this quiet behind the scenes sort of operator who wasn't seeking the spotlight. Is there anybody like that out there? Tom Cole, I guess might be where I go if I were to pick person like that, Mr. High?
You know, the name I hear the most is Patrick McHenry.
I've heard his name thrown around there too. He's really, I remember when he was the young gun, and now he's the sage. Yeah.
I first met him on the 2004 campaign trail when he was running for Congress. And, you know, he's become a very popular member amongst the conference, you know, and he's somebody who puts his head down and works, which I think there's something to be said for. But he's in that same situation like Paul Ryan of, I don't want to be speaker. I want to be the committee chair that I want to be, which for him is financial services.
Yeah. Sarah, any of those candidates you think could get 218?
I think either one of those candidates are great. I don't know, because I'll tell you, all of the Main Street members are focusing on trying to get, make sure Kevin gets a 218. They haven't had the conversations yet of what if. They're still trying to get Kevin there.
How you feel about being in the same coalition with Marjorie Taylor Greene, Sarah?
That only happens occasionally, like maybe once. Maybe this is it. I don't think she'll ever be with us again in anything, but we'll take her on this one.
Somebody wants her committee assignments, huh? Somebody's been promised. She got something out of them.
I think she must.
It's pretty clear.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah.
Don't know what it is, though.
Let's move over to the Senate. you know, I sort of, the grumbling about McConnell, Doug, is actually, you know, I'm old enough to remember Bob Corker blowing up at, you know, McConnell has always been a everybody's got to be on the same page. And if you're not, I don't like, you know, we can all back, I can backseat drive him as a journalist going, how come you're not telling us what you're going to do? But we know how he likes to operate.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't like any rogue anything. And he got mad at Corker for like going rogue and negotiating with Warner on his own back in the, back when they were doing some of the financial services stuff. But I've heard this grumbling about McConnell over the years. And I do wonder, you know, there is a sell by date for everybody, even Mitch McConnell, right? Is this, was this enough of a, this is probably his last term as leader, right?
You know, potentially. But, you know, to your point about you can't beat somebody with nobody. Sometimes you can't beat nobody, or you can't beat somebody with that somebody. And for anybody to run against McConnell, which I would say would be, would have been a fool's errand anyways, you know, Rick Scott is not the great messenger for that. If we want to talk about,
I know Kevin Cramer put, he's like, well, I don't know how he's qualified, right? Like, you know, what's on your resume, dude?
Exactly. And if we want to move past Trump, the guy who made up an award so he could give Trump a trophy, you know, and then delivered the results that we got. And by the way, interesting dynamic on this. We spend a whole campaign season saying that elections are not won or lost in Washington, D.C. And the day after the elections, we talk about who in D.C. won or lost.
Well, because actually it may have been won or lost in D.C. This may be one of those cases. Sarah, I mean, I don't ever want to under, you know, Harry Reid and Mitch McConnell survived much past the sell-by dates we all thought they've had or had. But this does feel, I mean, like I said, this has certainly opened up grumbling about McConnell in a public way that we've never used to see, in fairness.
That is true. That is very fair. But I think when this is all said and done, I think Mitch McConnell has this comfortably. I think if it was a Thune or a member like that, maybe I'd be worried about him. But
the Rubio thing, I thought Rubio coming out, I mean, it's mildly surprised me because he's got one of the most plum posts you can have that you need leadership support for, which is Intel. And I thought that was a bit telling when he jumped on this. Let's slow down. Let's slow the election. I assume he did not vote for Rick Scott. I know how I feel. I'm convinced he voted for Bill Nelson over Rick Scott in the actual election. But I don't know that. And, you know, I you know, don't get mad at me, Marco, for saying it. I'll just go to my grave believing it. So tough. So I'm sure he was a supporter of McConnell. But it told me something. Like, there is some frustration.
Well, as part of it, I think, is also, this is performative to the base if you want to run for president. And Rubio still wants to run for president. So he can then go to the Republican base, which is a very different thing than the Republican Senate conference, and say, look, you know, I stood up to, right? I was the ultimate thing that we know in Republican politics right now. I'm a fighter. You don't have to win the fight. You don't have to have a plan to land a punch or win around. You just have to say that you fought. That's Ted Cruz.
I'm going to pause there. We're going to take a quick break and talk about who could run the actual party, meaning the RNC. You're listening to the Chuck Toddcast from Meet the Press.
Wherever the road may take you, Discount Tire and Continental Tire get you there safely with the perfect combination of style, comfort, and price. Get a set of Continental tires at your local Discount Tire store or online at discounttire.com. Discount Tire, let's get you taken care of.
All right, so we've gone through McCarthy, we've gone through McConnell. Let's talk about Ronna McDaniel. From the outside, it looks like she should be vulnerable, but Doug, you know the 168, is she?
It is the College of Cardinals. And ultimately, you know, it is a club. And so part of the argument against people who were coming from outside of the organization, people who weren't on the committee, state party chairs, is the College of Cardinals only elects themselves. And, you know, that's where if Zeldin wants to challenge, I think he's got a great message. And he can talk about House members that he brought along. But they don't go outside of their own organization.
No, one of the last time they did, Sarah, was Michael Steele. I mean, that was actually an unusual thing for the party to do, to elect an outsider like that. Because I remember the first RNC chairman race I covered, it was a, you know, you had people like, God, I'm blanking on his name. Was it Jim from Colorado, Nicholson, sorry. And he was a party insider. He was a member of the RNC. It is hard if you're Kristi Noem or Lee Zeldin to get members inside that organization to support you, right, Sarah?
Yeah, that's true. I would admit we don't do much for the RNC here at the Republican Main Street Partnership. But if she was replaced, I tell you, I'd give a strong vote for Lee Zeldin. I think Lee Zeldin's performance in New York gave the majority to the Republicans in the House. He had coattails. Obviously, he didn't win, but boy, he pulled a lot of the Republican members through with him. So I think he, if they chose to get rid of her, I think he'd be a great RNC chairman.
He's certainly the governor of like Long Island and Hudson Valley, right?
Yeah, sure is.
let me ask you this. Is there anybody inside the RNC that could challenge McDaniel?
Look, I'd start with Henry Barber as being the best choice, but it's not clear that he wants to do it. And I should say, just for, clarification, Steele had been a state party chair, so he'd been in the clubhouse before.
Okay.
So
fair enough. Well, that's a reminder. I don't think either Zeldin or Gnome's ever been in the clubhouse.
No.
Right?
No.
By the way, interesting to me that Gnome threw herself out there. I think that's her way of taking herself out of 2024.
Potentially, but still in 2024, Veep stakes for sure.
Yeah, I would agree with you on the Veep stakes.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk about if you're somebody not named Trump wanting to run for president, when do you get in now? Do you have a theory, Sarah? I don't want to just focus on when DeSantis does it. I mean, I think that he's got his legislative session. There's some timing issues there. In theory, whether Trump was in or not, he wouldn't be getting in any sooner than May-ish, maybe June. Right. What other sitting governors have done. But is there any benefit of getting in early right now and being a foil to him or not?
Not Sarah? Yet. I would say April, May. And I actually think the first one is going to be in is going to be Mike Pence. And then I think that potentially could open the door for others to come in when Trump's vice president is running against him. So I think that's going to be
interesting.
An interesting dynamic to watch.
What do you think, Doug?
So Sarah sort of took my answer. But I would also say, for heaven's sakes, please nobody do it before Christmas, or New Year's. There is an appetite. The problem is so many of these folks, they want somebody else to go first so that they're the first one through the wall. They're the first one to go down, and then they can try and step in. But yeah, Pence could be, somebody who he's not going to be the nominee, but somebody who could be that kind of not just sacrificial lamb, but gives the ultimate permission. Mike Pence, the vice president, who was a stalwart for Trump until Trump essentially threatened his life.
And Mike Pompeo files 30 seconds later? Sir? Yep. Is that what it would be? So then you would have his secretary of state and his vice president, which is really unprecedented, Sarah, if you had that, right?
It sure is. And I think that's the way it would go. And then it gives... I guess everybody else, if they want to get in, like maybe a Sununu or Larry Hogan, enough cover. But I think those two end up going first. And I really do think Pence will go first.
All right. So now you see where this is headed. By Labor Day, how many people that will seem viable how about this? How many people will be running that their resume says they're legitimate candidates for president? I don't want to say viable. I don't know who's viable. Right. I don't know if Mike Pence is viable to actually get the nomination, but he certainly has the standing and you don't go, that guy's running. Right. I mean, are we going to end up with a dozen candidates trying to get into this for a while?
I hope not, because then we have a stage again where Donald Trump can win with a very small majority. So I hope that a group gets in that's going to get in. They talk amongst themselves after they look at some polling, and then there's one or two standing on that stage next to him. I mean, we got Donald Trump because so many people are on that stage, what, a dozen? I'd hate to see that repeated.
Boy, we learned a lesson, though, about human nature and narcissism the last time, Doug. It's just, it's a good idea. We should consolidate. Not everybody was Scott Walker, and he only dropped out first because he ran out of money.
Yeah. Look, and a lot of people were like, it's a great idea for this to be a smaller field. You get out.
Right.
Look, I'll be honest. I have no idea how many people are going to run. And you almost hear more people who are angling for Veep these days, which is a longer and longer list than for president. But I think clearly there's going to be a testing of waters to see if I put my toe in, is that water boiling because Trump makes it so. Mm-hmm. And then it may be a more the merrier. We just don't know yet.
let me go back to DeSantis. I'm listening to you guys talk about these early candidacies, and it makes me think maybe DeSantis should keep waiting, and he doesn't have to. The longer his candidacy is, the more vulnerable I think he would be. The shorter the candidacy is, perhaps, right? Let Trump punch himself out. I don't know. I mean, I can argue both sides of it. Sarah, what would you argue?
If I was advising him, I'd tell him to get in towards the end. He can be.
What's the end? Is the end November? Is the end September? Is the end
probably?
You know what? What is your definition of the end?
Probably the end of September, and then because everybody knows him. First of all, the base knows him. He gets a lot right. of press, so it's not like he's starting at scratch. So let everybody else kind of fight and duke it out, and then he comes in the end of September. That if I was advising him, that's what I would tell him to do. I think that's the best path. If not, Donald Trump will pick and pick and pick at him until maybe he's not even a viable candidate.
Yeah, I feel like Scott Walker is to me, if I were DeSantis, I would study everything Walker, because Walker was Walker in 2014, in 2015. The whole party was ready. Hey, he's next. The Koch brothers were in. Donors were in. He's next. He's the guy. He was the candidate that everybody, you know this, all the staffers wanted to get a job with because they all thought, oh, that's the right. He's that guy. And, you know, I guess one lesson I would take from that is that he got in too early and it was death by 1,000 cuts.
Yeah, I think so. And let Trump do what he's going to do, right? He's going to do it regardless. And he doesn't need to immediately change, you know, your calculation. And look, if Georgia goes south for us again, you know, that will provide more heat for Donald Trump and potentially real heat. I think if you're one of these potential Republican candidates, you don't have to be in a hurry. You don't have the mega donors who are locked down to him. You know, he has his list, and that is hugely significant, and that's not changing. So take your time, make your decision as you would anyway, with the caveat of, okay, what is somebody else going to do, and is it suicidal for
him? All right. Let me close with this. What's a piece of legislation, Sarah, that you'd like to see the House Republican Conference work with Biden on before 2024? Because I assume your members don't want to be defined by just gridlock, right? That is not what they want to be able to say. Hey, look, I was able to work with him on this. What's the this that won't alienate the base?
Energy.
Yeah.
They want to work with them on some good pieces of legislation around energy issues. I mean, we haven't built a refinery in this country in years. Lift some of the regulations and start to focus on becoming energy independent again. I think that's the one thing that they like to do with Biden right out of the gate.
The other thing I was thinking, Doug, was a good old fashioned more cops on the street bill.
Yeah, and we continue to see headlines that support that as an issue. It did win Republican races, obviously.
Particularly in blue states, yeah.
Yeah, and obviously that's New York. That was North Carolina as well. It was huge for Ted Budd. And every time we see another headline, so today, you know, in D.C., the city council voted to reduce penalties for carjackers. Like, I'm sorry, what?
I know.
This is where Republicans and Democrats, where some of their messaging can merge.
I guess the question I have is this virus that's in, frankly, the DNA of both parties, which is, hey, if you agree with the other side on something, the base will punish you. Mm-hmm. Sarah, how concerned are you about that virus in the GOP?
I'm very concerned about that. I mean, we had some of our great members lose because of that. Jamie Herrera Butler and Peter Meyer. So I'm very concerned about making sure we keep the base happy. But at the same time, what we're really focusing on, the Republican Main Street Partnership, is turning out more people to vote in primaries. We would not be having this discussion if more people turned out to vote in primaries. And we have to educate the American people that is, they have to vote twice in one year. They've got to vote in the primary and they've got to vote in the general, especially with.
Yeah, if you don't like it, I almost want to say, are you tired of voting for the lesser of two evils?
Yeah.
Then show up for your primaries. Yeah.
And most people don't even know when their primary is in their state. We have to fix that as a country. And, you know, I mean, sometimes with all the gerrymandered districts, that vote is more important than the general election vote.
You know, Sarah, I think you can find a lot of people left and right in the sort of center left and center right who are petrified of extremes winning primaries in general. You know, you probably could find a big coalition that would spend money to get more awareness of primaries.
That's what we're trying to do. We're focusing first on women, trying to get the women to turn out to vote in primaries.
I'd add the process of the primary as well. You know, so North Carolina is another good example. Open primary in North Carolina. That's why Madison Cawthorn lost. If it was a closed primary, he wins.
Yeah.
And, oh, by the way, that's probably one more seat the Democrats pick up. Yep. As we learned from the Madison Cawthorn. I mean, one of the most interesting things, and this is something that the Democrats, I don't think, have fully realized yet, the Republican potential for getting to 54 or 55% of the vote, if they somehow detach from the Trump crazy, seems to, like, there's more of a path to 55 for the GOP if they got rid of their crazy than where the Democrats are. The Democrats may have a higher floor, but they may have the lower ceiling right now.
Yeah. And, you know, to your point about, you know, are you poisoned in the party by the base if you work with the other side? I'd throw in also the caveat of that happens within the conference, too. You know, I remember Robert Draper wrote a book a few years back on the Republican conference, and he reported in there that when the Tea Party Congress came into being, it was Ro Labrador who stood up in a Republican meeting and said, I didn't come here to be a part of any team. Well, okay, you still have the Trump team, but a lot of members, that's their kind of raison d'etre. They want to be a thorn in Kevin McCarthy's side and Mitch McConnell's side, because again, it goes back to that fighting atmosphere. So they're not even thinking about smart bipartisan legislation.
Yeah. How's Raul Labrador's political career?
Exactly.
I mean, I don't mean, I'm not trying to be negative. No, but my point is that I just feel like that is not a long-term road to success in American politics, Sarah, right? When you take that road.
I would not think so.
Mm-mm. You know, you see a guy like Don Bacon or Tom Cole and they survive and you say, there's a reason for it.
I think David Valdeo is going to survive. There's a reason for that. Brian Fitzpatrick in the suburbs of Philadelphia.
You're describing members who seem to care about their constituents first.
Yeah.
Is what you're saying. Yeah. Don't vote. Yeah. Constituents over party if you have to.
Yeah.
Anyway, you guys were candid and great. I appreciate it. Always a pleasure. Doug, who is going to be the celebrity White House? Have you got it lined up already? You know, Doug is known for having these great Christmas cards where it's always him next to some celebrity you'd never expect him to be standing next to. You did Shaq 1 year. You've been at the Eiffel Tower. Is it Coach K? Did you do Coach K 1 year?
Hey,
I've met Coach K, but no, I've never.
That would, you're a UNC guy, so that would really offend your family. Right?
Yeah, well, it would offend me too. Look, we're still in a COVID world where you don't see people as much, right? So, yeah. I don't know.
Well,
I met Nucky the other night. That was cool.
All right. Well, I look forward to seeing what you come up with. Sarah Chamberlain, Republican Mainstream Partnership. Doug High, Republican Strategist. You guys are great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Chuck Toddcast from Meet the Press. Today's episode was produced by Elias Miller and Matt Rivera. The theme music composed by Spoke Media. Meet the Press Now is live every day at 4 p.m. Eastern on NBC News Now. Meet the Press Reports is available to binge anytime you want. We have 5 seasons there. Catch up now. And it's wherever you get NBC News video. And then there's a big show available every Sunday morning, wherever you get your NBC program. Thanks for listening. And until we upload again.
Wherever the road may take you, Discount Tire and Continental Tire get you there safely with the perfect combination of style, comfort, and price. Get a set of Continental tires at your local Discount Tire store or online at DiscountTire.com. Discount Tire, let's get you taken care of.